Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, Health for Partners After Sexual Betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
So I've got Amy on the line. Amy, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about what healthy sexuality looks like when a sex addict is in recovery.
One of the things we know about research and sex addicts is that they don't necessarily want sex with their own wife. And so to me, that says he's in really good recovery because he does want that with you. He has been 2 years sober. He has been in 3 facilities. And I suspect that's how he's wanting closeness with you.
And that is indicative of, you know, somebody who really is changing. Now, I'm going to have to redo that intro, because it isn't that men don't want sex with their wives. More often than not, it's that men can't have sex with their wives because they've trained their brains to objectify women and look at porn. And so that's why so many treatment centers right off the bat say, hey, you've got to have a 30, 60, 90-day abstinence clause from sex, period, so that we can calm down the brain. And we can get a calm down so that you can begin to work on sexuality again and retrain it to be excited by the human body, not somebody who's been airbrushed or not somebody who makes his or her living from sex trafficking or, you know, being a sex worker or anything that is really not part of the human connection. So it is very possible for someone to love his partner and to retrain the brain to love all the aspects of sexuality with her. That's the good news. So I'm going to see what I can do about changing that commercial up, because I don't want to give any of you the impression that the sex addict doesn't love you. He just has taught himself to love another form of sexuality to the point where he can't perform. And that may look like he cannot get an erection. Or it may look like he cannot have an orgasm. And that's very trainable. We say the brain is full of neuroplasticity and can be retaught anything. And we're happy about that. So I'll tell you something else I'm happy about. Oh, my goodness. I've been working so hard on this. Probably over 500 hours in putting together a post-traumatic growth course, and it's done, and it's available, and I'm super jazzed about it because it shows women that, you know, once they've gotten through discovery and they're beginning to feel safety and stabilization, they go through the hard process of grief. And grief can take several months. It can take a half a year. It can take 2 years. It can even take 3 years. It depends on many, many factors. The most important thing is how a woman feels betrayed. You know, if she feels very betrayed, and she knows that she's safe, she's going to be able to read the signs. But she is unsure as to whether he's really working a good recovery program, that's going to keep her in grief. And or if a woman knows he's in good recovery and she begins to feel good about herself again, she doesn't doubt herself and she is good enough and she really understands about compulsive problematic sexual behavior, she knows that that had nothing to do with her, even though it affected her in so many ways. But she also says, you know, that was about him having a disease that took him down, him having a disorder that robbed him and I of his ability to connect. When a woman recognizes that after a while, it wasn't choice. He didn't know what to do to get out of it. She can then begin to feel like she can renew her own sense of self and her own soul. And that's so important, that she renew her spirit. Hey, we're going to be talking about spirit today, as a matter of fact. I'm super excited to be talking with an expert who has written this guidebook that's free to you all. My course costs, and by the way, you can get it on Sex Help with Carol the Coach. But Jenny Rochelle has written a guidebook on how to survive the trauma of sexual betrayal. And see, we all know that once you've survived that and you grieve, then you can restore your sense of self, that's post-traumatic growth, and begin to really focus on yourself again. So her guide is free, and it can be found at www.sexaddictionguidebook.com. That's pretty easy, isn't it? And she's going to be talking about the six essential elements for getting through the process of partner betrayal. And I said, speaking of spirituality, she is also currently working on her master's in spiritual formation. And so she's going to be talking about how can a partner heal spiritually? And how can the spiritual community support a partner? Because oftentimes, partners have been through spiritual trauma too. You know, people didn't understand. Maybe they made reference to a question that hurt. And that question might have looked like, well, how often were you having sex with your husband? And here the partner has shared with a pastor or a spiritual director, you know, her partner betrayal. And then the next question is, how often were you having sex? Which insinuates that it was a sexual issue and the partner was somehow to blame. And we all know that a man's sexual addiction is in no way, absolutely in no way your fault. You know, you might have had marital issues. That did not cause his addiction. You might have had sexual problems. That did not cause his addiction. His addiction more than likely started way before you. And so, Jenny's going to be talking about what to expect from the spiritual community and maybe even how you can refocus them if they look like they're on the wrong track. This really is a problem, and at APSATS, part of the curriculum is helping the spiritual community to know how to handle partner betrayal and how they can be more partner sensitive. And that is actually a course within our training. Because oftentimes, that's the first place a couple goes after discovery. Well, maybe that's the first place an addict goes before he's even told his wife. More often than not, wives don't share that information with the church until he is identified as having a problem. It's women are so loyal, and they don't want oftentimes to expose the community to what's really going on with their husbands because it feels so shameful. And yet, as a partner, you have to find safe people that you can talk to. I know I was just talking to a woman today, and not only is there sexual betrayal in the form of pornography and objectification, but he has also molested some of their kids. And she just found that out. And she went to the church, and the church didn't know what to do with it other than to say, you know what, we'll call him Tom. That is not his real name. Tom, you can't come back here to this church. And so, you know, we want to help churches know how to handle this. To be able to say, the churches can say, you know, you might go to this 12-step group, or you might contact this person on the website. He or she has an APSATS certification, which means they really know how to handle you with kid gloves. They're partner sensitive. And when the church knows better, they do better. So we're going to be talking about that too today. And she's going to be helping partners. Jenny is our expert, is going to be helping partners find support in their faith community in healthy ways. And I am so all about that. Because, I mean, that is why I created this course. I wanted you to know that if you're in grief, but you're beginning to think about you and what do you need and how does that happen, you're in post-traumatic growth too. And we want to strengthen that stage. We don't want you to cheat the grief. I mean, you need to grieve as long as you need to grieve. And unfortunately, there's no wrong or right way to do that. And there's no length of time. But absolutely, we also want you to know your strengths. We want you to focus on yourself. We want you to find something that makes you happy or gives you purpose. I wrote this shortcut manual, and I did it about 10 years ago. It's Finding God's Given Dream. And the manual itself is a way to help you to pay attention to your own intuition. Let's face it, your brain's been offline, you haven't trusted your intuition, you said to yourself, wow, I should have known better, and if I would have known better, I could have done better, and I could have prevented this, or I could have stopped it, or slowed it down, or whatever. But having somebody in your life that has a sexual addiction can feel all-consuming, and that is a protective stress response. And so when you get to feeling a little bit safer and you breathe a little bit more, then it's super important for you to listen to yourself and listen to those messages that may be nudging at your heartstring to do something that's 100% different than being a stay-at-home mom, or do something that's 100% different than managing a company. Maybe that would mean that you actually put together a Bible study or a book club, or you volunteer at the Humane Society, or you rock babies twice a month at your local children's hospital, or you write a book, you know, like Jenny did, a guidebook on how to survive the trauma of sexual betrayal. Or you come to APSATS and you become a coach or a clinician and, you know, you give back to partners. I mean, there are so many exciting ways to do that, but you definitely have to be in the right frame of mind, and you have to get through the first two stages to the best of your ability. You and I both know it's not linear. You move back and forth depending on what might be a trigger or what might be happening in your life. Had a woman today whose stepfather fell in the hospital, and he's very, very sick from it, and it triggered her loss about her father, which triggered the loss of control that she felt when her husband acted out. So they're all kind of related, and that's what trauma is all about. It gets lumped together. And so we're going to be talking with Jenny Rochelle to find out more about what she would recommend to survive the trauma of sexual betrayal. So, Jenny, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hi, Carol. Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor.
Oh, absolutely. And we feel honored, too. And especially the fact that you've written this guidebook and you offer it for free. I want to know a little bit about what motivated you to get into this business, and if you could share your story with us.
Sure. I'd be happy to. So I think like many coaches who come into this business, I'm an ex-partner of a sex addict. And so, you know, a few years ago, about 7 years into my marriage, I discovered that my husband, who, you know, was the love of my life, was a sex addict and had been living this double life. The irony is that for me, I was already a life coach at that point and trying to sort of figure out really what my niche and my specialty was going to be. And so when this started happening and unfolding in my life, it pretty soon became clear to me that this is my calling. This is what I was going to end up doing. And then, of course, I had to move through. Ultimately, was a divorce for me, and working through that process and doing a lot of healing on my own before I was ready to sort of open the doors to my own practice and begin working with partners.
And so you developed this niche based on your own need and the trauma that you experienced. And can you tell us what was your trauma like as a betrayed partner?
Well, I think I sort of experienced all of the classic symptoms, definitely a lot of anxiety, a very high startle reflex, ended up, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat, I lost a lot of weight, I had trauma brain where I was super fuzzy, I had trouble concentrating, I had trouble remembering things. And one of the most painful things was an experience called, existential trauma, where it was sort of like, I love this image, Carol, of like it was kind of like somebody took an axe to be a little graphic and like cut my brain in two. And in one hand was the half that like was the past that I'd had with my husband. And in the other hand was what I knew to be true now about my husband. And the pain of trying to fit those two things together was excruciating. And eventually I realized I couldn't put them back together. And it was that realization that in that moment, it kind of helped me move forward and work through that particular piece of it.
And you said you couldn't put it back together in that way because?
Because both things are true. Like I was trying to like, one or the other had to be true, or how could I reconcile, this man, how could he be this person, that had lied and done all these things, and how could he be the man that I loved? And he was both of those things, right? Both things are true about sex addicts because we know their ability to compartmentalize. But what brought me relief was just trying to force those two things back together and just accept, like in this sort of non-dual way, that both things were true.
Well, and you used the word compartmentalized, and maybe for some of our new listeners, we should explain that a sex addict, part of the way that he can continue to love his family, his wife, and his life, and then act out sexually, feel bad about himself, but have both of those experiences at the same time, as we call compartmentalization. And he will be with his family, and then he'll put them in a box, he'll shut the lid, he'll go act out, and then he'll put that in a box, and he'll shut the lid, and then he goes to work, and he's working during the day, and with a lot of invasive thoughts about how he could act out, and he shuts the box. And so that when those compartments get opened and shut and opened and shut, it allows him to lead a dual life. And that's why Jenny was saying both of those scenarios were true. And I get that, Jenny. So is that what helped you to create this guidebook? And I want to remind people, the guidebook is called Surviving His Sex Addiction and Betrayal, A Guidebook for a Woman in the Desert. And you can get that guidebook by going to www.sexaddictionguidebook.com. And we'll put that on Facebook so that you know how to access it if you need it. So, again, Jenny, is that what got you to create the guidebook?
It is. I really wanted to create this guidebook because it's a book that I wish I'd had earlier on in my process. You know, Carol, how rapidly this field is growing and how so much more is available today for partners than 5 years ago even. And what I wanted to create was something that pulled together all the tools that I used during my own process. Like, I think there are a lot of books that talk about boundaries and safety, and there are books that talk about the spiritual component, and there are books that talk about self-care, and there are books that talk about the support that you need. But I really wanted to pull all of those things together and say, this is what I did to reclaim my life and go from, like, survival, overwhelm mode to, like, thriving and literally happier now, Carol, than I've ever been. And so that's really why I wanted to create it, and I wanted to make it free so that, you know, all the partners out right now who are, you know, Googling in the middle of night trying to find help and find questions could download it and get that access and get to it immediately and get some questions answered for themselves.
Okay, so if you would, why did you call it a guidebook for a woman in the desert?
You know, I love that phrase so much because I think it, for me, it describes how I felt after I discovered, you know, that my husband was a sex addict. It was like everything that I knew about life had been wiped away, and I was now sort of wandering in the desert alone, right, in this new undiscovered country and trying to figure out what I was going to do and how I was going to recreate my life, knowing that I was basically starting over. And at one point, when I was working with a coach of mine, you know, we were talking about myself and my own experience and, like, trying to get clarity about whether to leave my marriage. And, you know, I think like many partners, I went back and forth on that decision many times. And one of the things that my coach said to me was, when a woman goes into the desert, if she doesn't have something to hold on to, she'll go back. And so I just deeply resonated with that. And for me, like, the things that I held on to were, one, you know, my spirituality and my relationship with God. But it was also, like, the other women who came into my life in forms of support and sisterhood. So the coaches that I worked with and also the women's groups, the other partners that I got to work with. Like, so I love that phrase, and I wanted to carry it forward. And the more you dig into it in terms of scripture and other, you know, great images and literature, it's such a powerful, it just, I'm hoping that's going to resonate with other partners as much as it does with me.
Well, that totally makes sense, and it also would be predictable that there would be less things to hang on to for sure in the desert. So tell us a little bit about what are the six essential elements in your approach with this guidebook.
Sure. I'd be happy to, and I think some of them will sound very familiar to you, Carol. So the first one is safety. They all start with S's. The first one is safety. As you know, when a partner comes in, the first thing we need to do is, like, how do we create safety for them? And that looks primarily looking at boundaries as the number one way to create safety. But also, the next one we talk about is self-regulation. I know most people like to use the word self-care, and to me, self-care and self-regulation sort of go hand in hand. But, like, I really want to empower women to learn to regulate their own nervous systems. You know, there's so much research going on right now with polyvagal theory and the vagus nerve and, like, being able to manage your trauma symptoms so that you can stay calm and trust your intuition is so powerful. And so that's a huge thing that I like to focus on. The next one is support. So making sure you have the right support in terms of, like, working with someone who's trained to deal with partners of sex addicts. And I definitely recommend that you know, that partners work with both a therapist and a coach, because 1 hour a week in a therapy session is not enough. It was certainly not enough for me. And then also sisterhood, which is, like, in terms of a women's group, I think there's nothing more powerful than having a community who has a shared story, who you can connect with, and they understand exactly what you're experiencing. And then spirituality, it was key for me, like, being able to make meaning out of your suffering and what's happening to you, I think helps get you through those dark nights of the soul, so to speak. And then finally, a strategy. I know that every woman's story is different, but, you know, there are certain pieces that you need to move forward with in terms of, like, you know, disclosure and a polygraph and, like, just so that they feel like they have some agency over their life again. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. And let's face it, they're all simple but difficult, but the strategy can be the toughest, because it's figuring out what you need and what would make you feel safe, how would it help you to support you. So then the six essential elements are really the guidebook to restoring one's sense of sanity.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay, so if you had to pick one element to start with, what would it be?
You know, I think creating safety is the first thing that we always want to look at, just in terms of boundaries, but also in terms of if there's any sort of physical or emotional abuse going on, and trying to tap into that. And then, you know, I go back and forth between self-regulation and sisterhood. Hopefully, you know, when you're looking at when you're having these discussions, you already have some good support in place, but self-regulation, being able to calm your body and regulate your nervous system through meditation or yoga or walks, and there's so many great tools. But also, like, sisterhood, I can't talk about my women's group without crying. Like, like, that was one of the most powerful things, to be witnessed by other women. It's so important to partners.
Well, I know, and, you know, when I meet a woman who says, oh, I don't get along with women, you know, I just have no desire to hang out with women, I say to them, please give this a chance, because I don't want to say it's refreshing, but it is definitely, it's so safe to be in a room with women who understand how you feel. I mean, there is really some universal feelings that occur when you've been through this kind of trauma and this kind of betrayal. And so I say, please just give it 6 times, and then you get to decide what needs to happen from there. I mean, if you've tried it 6 times and it's still not for you, we'll figure out some additional ways to get that support. Now, the kind of groups you were in, were they coaching groups, therapy groups, or support groups?
They were coaching groups. So they were all, and they were tailored to sort of fit where I was. Or many of the women in the groups, we moved through a series of groups together with our coach. So in the beginning, we were like, you know, the sort of should we stay or should we go group. And then there were the one, then we moved to the, okay, now we're getting divorced group. And then there's the, like, the, I know you like to call it the post-traumatic growth group. Like, then we were in that group for a while. And so, you know, we were together through so many seasons of our life, but they were all facilitated by a coach.
And that is where coaching is a phenomenal support and adjunct to any kind of therapy. You said it earlier when you said this kind of trauma requires a whole committee of resources. And so can you share how a coach could support a group who experiences partner betrayal?
Sure. So it's really creating, you know, a safe space for a group of women to come together and share their stories. And, you know, coaches are just really good, I think, at holding space and being a loving presence for women when they come together. My own experience is, you know, we would check in sort of what was going on in the moment with one another, and then we would have sort of like the ability to deep dive into whatever was going on. And one of the great things, you know, about this kind of sisterhood is that it doesn't really matter. But we were all so diverse and different. Like, we all came from different backgrounds, had different religious beliefs, had different political beliefs, but, like, you know, we have the tightest community that, going forward, we're still super close with one another. And so in my groups, what I like to do is to move through, and we use this guidebook as sort of a basis to move through. And each week we sort of go through one of these six essential components and focus on those, as well as making sure we have time to talk about anything that's going on in the lives of any coaching around a specific issue. The other great thing about group coaching is, you know, I've talked a lot about self-regulation, but also one of the big buzzwords right now is co-regulation. Like, we need to be around other people to also regulate with other safe people in the world. And so the great thing about women's groups is that usually, you know, you have this collection of women who are at different spaces on the path. And so you might be, you know, really triggered and activated one day, but that same day, you know, your cohort is in a really good place and is able to be this calm, you know, reassuring, grounded presence for you. And so having like this broad spectrum of nervous systems and where people are in their healing is just so good for the community as a whole.
Well, I 100% agree. And as a clinician, I say to my clients, you know what, I don't want to treat you in a vacuum, and I want you to have support 24/7. And what my experience of groups is, that they are there for their sisters, if you will, 24/7. Come on over, have a cup of coffee. You can call me till midnight. I'm a night owl. You can call me at 5 in the morning. I'm an early bird. So they really help meet the needs that a clinician can't possibly be expected to do.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. Yeah, the group texts are active and ongoing and, you know, will continue for some time even after the group no longer meets together regularly. They'll still stay in contact and stay in touch. You know, and as a coach, I'm also able to offer that kind of support, and I'm involved, you know, in the group texts as well. But it's great that I know that these other women also have each other's back.
Mm-hmm. So now, obviously, you're a real self-motivating person, and you got through this trauma and found your own post-traumatic growth. And so I got to ask you, I know that you're in the midst of getting your master's in spiritual formation. First, tell our listening audience, what is spiritual formation, and then why did you decide to go this route?
So spiritual formation, you know, it's I will be trained. Well, I'm already a spiritual director, but I, you know, will continue to be educated and receive more practicum hours as a spiritual director. We can talk about that as well. But a spiritual formation program is really for people who know that God has a purpose for them, and they sort of need the time and space to figure that out. And so what I figured out through this is that my work is to work with partners of sex addicts. And also when I'm developing, I have to do, you know, a big project instead of a thesis, I have to develop a project. And so the project that I'm developing is coming up with a workshop or a curriculum to help train other spiritual directors, as well as, you know, other spiritual caregivers, pastors, chaplains, priests, even laypersons, how to care for the souls of partners of sex addicts. Because we know that, like, you know, the spiritual trauma that partners experience is also very profound, and it definitely can impact their relationship with God. So that's why this work is very important to me. And spiritual formation is just someone who's trained to work with people through, like, their spiritual process and help be, I keep saying the word loving presence, but, like, be present to their story. And honestly, Carol, and I've wrestled with this quite a bit, I sort of don't see that big of a difference for me in terms of spiritual direction versus coaching. I sort of at some point had to wrestle whether one was different than the other. In terms of what I do, they're very, very similar.
Okay, and so, you know, obviously you don't see that much of a difference because they all, both positions really assesses the partner and for health, for safety and stabilization, and for the tools she's going to need to get through the process of sex addiction and betrayal. So now you said, you kind of talked about the spiritual director and, you know, spiritual formation. You've developed a curriculum for your master's project. Tell us about that. What is curriculum?
I'd love to. So I call it Woman in the Desert, Caring for the Souls of Partners of Sex Addicts. And it's still being developed right now. And I'm, you know, I have a committee as part of my degree that I'm working on. But my goal is to take basically the guidebook, which was written for partners, but take it and put it into a training. And I've started the bones of it already. For training that shares all of that information with spiritual caregivers so that when they meet partners, because as we know, often they're the front lines, you know, one of the first people that interact with partners and also with the sex addicts when after discovery happens. And so make sure that they know, you know, all the different traumas that partners experience and that they have like this set of tools to work with and avoid what, you know, I know in APSATS is referred to as this treatment-induced trauma. Unfortunately, like you don't know about sex addiction or really how to care for partners until it comes into your life. And so I know that these folks are doing the very best that they can. And I just want to be on their team to help them understand how to care for women like me, right, and my other sisters.
Absolutely. So do you have a story of how a spiritual caregiver cared for you?
I do. And, you know, I will try not to cry when I tell this story. So one of the things I'm doing is, as a part of this work is starting to collect stories from other partners and I've kind of in their experience with spiritual caregivers, and I want both positive ones and negative ones. And so for me, I actually have a really positive one. I went to visit a man who was a pastor. He was actually the head of the department at this Episcopal Seminary of the Southwest and this degree program that I'm working on. And he was a pastor. And I had met him for like 5 minutes when I toured the school. And then I went in to meet with him again before I formally accepted to start going to the school, because since I had applied and gotten accepted, I had discovered that my husband, he's not my ex-husband, had relapsed, and I was now really ready to deal with what was going on in my life. And so I went to him, and I had really been struggling with, like, what does God want me to do? What is the right thing to do? And I looked at this man who I barely knew, and I'm telling him everything because he was one of those beautiful souls who could listen to all of it. And I'm telling him my whole story, and then I look at him and I say, you know, does God want me to stay? And he pauses for a moment, and then he looks at me and he says, no, that Christ was well documented as being against the suffering of women. And that was such a powerful moment for me. And I look back now and I realize how risky that actually was for me. If he had said something different, and you know, maybe not everybody agrees with that position, but in that moment, he freed me to be able to make the decision that I needed to make, that was the right decision for my safety and my emotional and mental well-being. So I just love that story.
Well, absolutely. And so, again, you really paid attention intuitively to the messages of God, and there wasn't a hard and fast rule from your own connection with your higher power. There was not a hard and fast rule. It was, no, he would not necessarily want you to stay. It's not a black and white issue. Yeah.
Right.
And that is really, you know, that had to be liberating, because obviously that gave you the freedom to really make choices.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It was so liberating for me. That's a great word.
So now, how do you think partners or other coaches who are listening out there, how do you think that they can contribute in their own lives, or maybe even how can partners or other coaches who are listening help you with this project that you're doing?
Sure. So, I'm like I mentioned, I'm collecting stories. I'll be doing some field research, and I want to start cataloging and collecting stories, as many as I can, to sort of get some statistics around the number of experiences. But I really also am a big believer in the power of story. Like, nothing teaches us a person's experience more powerfully than hearing their story. So I want to make sure I have lots of great moving stories to include in this curriculum to share with them, the spiritual caregivers that I'm working with. So anyone who's interested in sharing could definitely reach out to me via email, and I would love to hear from them.
Okay, and so again, you're looking for stories to help you in your master's project, and the stories have to do with how a spiritual caregiver cared for them.
Yes, yes. And okay. And I want to hear how they got it right, and I want to hear when they got it wrong. Like, I want to hear both sides of the coin.
Wow. Okay, so give us an example of how they could have gotten it wrong.
Let's see. You know, I've heard stories, and my experience was mainly positive, you know, but I've heard other stories of women who were basically excommunicated from their church, or who were told, God wants you to stay, and divorce is an abomination. You know, so things like that, it's just really, I feel like the woman is trapped in this situation. And it's for, I think, people who don't understand sex addiction, and they don't understand that this person, that this woman is experiencing a trauma.
Yeah, and you know, it always does my heart good when I make a referral and I say, you know, talk with your priest about that, or talk to your pastor. Talk to your rabbi. And clearly, it's people that I know are out there and are very compassionate and customize recommendations based on what the partner needs. And, you know, biblically, they explain why the partner may have thought a certain way or has a certain belief. And they're just very open to that dialogue. So you're looking for stories of how spiritual caregivers care for you in a positive way or a negative way. And how can they get those to you, those stories?
So if they will just send me an email to Jenny, J-E-N-N-I, at JennyRochelle.com. So J-E-N-N-I. At JennyRochelle.com. They can send me an email, and in the subject line say partner story, and just tell me they have a story that they want to share, and then I will take it from there. I will be developing sort of a standard format so they get all the same questions and consistency, so we can maybe extrapolate some data from that if possible. But right now, I'm also just sort of bringing all of this into being, Carol. So I think once I start talking with women, like, it's going to take more and more shape.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because I did just get this post-traumatic growth online course done. And in this course, I have included the stories of 10 partners, one being male, and then one sex addict who's married to a partner that we interview too, and kind of show that coupleship and how it looks when it's healthy and healed. But I say, you know, my skills and tips and videos and quizzes and articles that I include in the course are really well done. I know that. But I get a tear in my eye every time I hear the partners describe how they found hope, how they got to the other side, how they detached. And I even have typed in under their picture when they say, you know, I learned to have faith again. I learned I could trust my higher power. And I put trust higher power. Or, you know, I realized I needed more support, so I joined a group. And I'll put joined a group. Because truly, you and I both know, Jenny, that after discovery, the brain is so offline that women can hear things, they can read things, they can see things, but it doesn't necessarily stick and may not even filter in because their brain has been traumatized by the discovery. And that's a
Absolutely.
Slow process. Yeah, so if they can hear somebody talk about how it affected them, it sometimes can take them one step away from their own trauma to watch somebody else's, and especially within the constraints of doing better, feeling better, living stronger, and loving again.
Yeah.
And it seems like you really have found your niche. You are following through on what's nudging you to do more and to make a difference. So as we wind up this interview today, what might you tell a partner to help get them through the betrayal of sexual addiction?
Great question. Always, you know, I try to reinforce that there's always hope and there's always healing and that there's always more love and happiness available. I remember my coach telling me that I would be happy again, and she goes, it won't be tomorrow, it might be a year. And I just looked at her like, you know, I remember that feeling of never going to be happy again, but like, I'm living proof. I'm happier today than I've ever been. I'm remarried. Like, I'm madly in love. I found, you know, a good man. But before that, you know, I went through the process of falling in love with myself. And so my message is there's always hope, there's always healing, and there's always more love for you.
Wow. And it sounds like you exemplify having created a new life that supports you. So, Jenny Rochelle, I thank you so much. I want to remind everybody, you can take a look at her website. That's www.jenny, J-E-N-N-I, Rochelle, R-O-C-H-E-L-L-E.com, and get over to her other site, sexaddictionguidebook.com, and pick up your free guidebook. Jenny, thanks so much. You're making a difference.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Carol.
All right. And make sure to take bottled water into that desert as you help women out.
Absolutely.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So there again, you've heard from a lot of coaches on this show. It's so interesting because I'm a clinician, but I too am a coach. And sometimes counseling centers don't understand how instrumental coaches are in making a difference in the life of mental health clients. And I think Jenny just showed you how she did. I mean, not only is she out there working the troops, but she also is creating resources for them as she goes along. So listen, I thank you so much for joining me today finding out about this guidebook for women in the desert, Sex Addiction Guidebook, and we'll see you next week for more Betrayal Recovery Radio. And you know, you probably are saying this right now with me. As I always say, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. And we will talk to you soon and have it. Make it a great week, would you?
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.